offensive than Mandingo. More shocking than Behind the Green Door. More erotic than Deep Throat.
Hi, this is Irv Katz, and welcome to Dial a Dork, the Cleveland radio home for nerds, geeks, and dorks. For the next hour, we'll take your calls about your crashed computer, your hung-up software, your level 17 paladin, or whatever geek-worthy topic you have in mind. Call us at 216-578-1300 and let the Dial a Dork community assist you. And now, here's your Cleveland dorks.
I just wanted to say that I'm a nerd.
Y'all ready for this? Welcome to Dial a Dork, everyone. Another triumphant edition awaits you over the course of the next hour. My name is Irv. I am here in the studio with a full complement of dorks. I've got Matt over here.
Hello.
I got Russ.
Yo.
I got Ty.
Ahoy.
This is not Pirate Month. Come on.
And we've got yet to be nicknamed Kim in the booth answering the phones. We got Jeremy on the board. So we are looking good right about now. And let's just jump right into the show here with our housekeeping, house cleaning, pay the bills type deal. This week's show is sponsored by Nauticon, Notacon, aka not enough. Okay, aka is not part of the spelling. Sorry about that. Nauticon being held April 8th through the 10th at the Holiday Inn downtown Lakeside. Nauticon is the second iteration of a yearly technology, arts, and music event held in Cleveland, Ohio. This year's focus is on how technology and community intermingle. The event itself hosts speakers, events, games, live music, and a whole lot more. So go to Nauticon, Notacon.org, and find out more. And join us there. We'll be there the first night doing a special broadcast of Dial a Dork on the 8th for a couple of hours, in fact.
Two.
To be exact. And we'd also like to thank VisionNet, our preferred ISP. VisionNet provides network consulting, website development, web hosting, internet connectivity, and VoIP services. For all your technological needs, contact VisionNet at 1-800-645-9351. 645-9351. Yeah. If anybody wants to talk to Matt, his cell phone is still on, so give him a call. And VisionNet is local. You don't have to send your money to some company located somewhere else. Just keep it local. Call VisionNet. Or send your money to us if you'd like to advertise on this show. You can get an advertisement on this show for as little as $5 million. So give us a call. Okay, I'm just kidding.
No, $5 million would be great.
$2.5 million would be acceptable.
Don't sell yourself short. You create value like that.
That's true. That's true. We can, yes.
This is the kind of show where we can tell people we cost $5 million to get on.
Then we, right. We give them the normal $30 rate or $60 rate, and they're like, that's a deal.
Yeah. You don't want to price things. You don't want to price things too low. Because then people are like, well, how come it costs so little?
Right. People like Herb don't use free software for that very reason, I think.
Speaking of free software.
Unless he's worked it off a Wares line, it's not worth anything.
Thanks. Thanks, Russ. Appreciate that. Speaking
of. Herb doesn't actually do that. Neither do any of the rest of us.
No, and nor do we advocate it in any way, shape, or form, paying for taking overpriced software with poor functionality and bad support and not paying for it.
Right.
That would be completely wrong. But for the 18th time now, speaking of free software, even though this isn't really so much software as it is just free, we are going to talk a little bit tonight about the Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's not free software.
Dead silence.
There is free software involved in the production of Wikipedia. It's called the MediaWiki.
MediaWiki, yeah. It's one of the most scalable wikis.
Anybody can download that if they feel like it.
All right. Well, why don't
anybody can install it if they feel like it.
Why don't we backtrack. What the hell is a wiki?
Hold on. Tell people how to call in.
Oh, you're right. You're right. To Purple find out business. More about Wikipedia, call Dial-A-Dork at 216-578-1300. As it said in the intro, Matt.
Wikipedia is not a tech support line, and neither is Dial-A-Dork a tech support line for Wikipedia.
Also,
it's not a paid endorsement. You may not rebroadcast this without the express written consent of Earthcats.
Participation may vary. You can also get a hold of us at dorks@dialadork.com, and that's hyphenated, dial-a-dork.com. dorks@dialadork.com. You can email us, and if we deem your email sufficiently geek-worthy...
Or if we deem it in our inbox.
If we can actually read it, then we'll probably do something about it on the air. But anyway...
If it doesn't say Micro Machines, it's not the real thing.
Oh my God, that's right. I remember those things. All right, now, let's talk about real quick what is a wiki? Because we need to understand what a wiki is before we can have an intelligent discussion about the Wikipedia, which we probably won't do anyway. At least not intelligent anyhow. Not a chance. Okay. What is a wiki? Who would like to take that? Show of hands. Everybody's pointing at Matt. Matt, go. You're on the spot.
He's the only one fluent in Hawaiian.
In Hawaiian, that's right. Here we go. A wiki is simply a...
W-I-K-I.
Well, if you're gonna...
That's how it's spelled.
W-I-K-I,
wiki.
Very simply, a wiki is a collection of, community-created web pages.
I don't think you're allowed to say community on the air.
Well, I was, whatever. It's simply a set of web pages that makes it extraordinarily easy for the user, the end user of the content, to edit that very same content.
That's a pretty unusual thing on the interweb. It's really easy to go around and read everything that's ever been written, but if you want to be a publisher of information on the internet, historically you needed to know enough to figure out how to do that. Short of web message boards where you could post something along with everybody else's message, which isn't all that interesting. With a wiki, you can edit a page that's published that a lot of people look at. If it's a well-publicized wiki, you don't need to know a lot. You don't need to have a special tool that you go into a server and pull a file out and edit it with codes in it and put it back. With a wiki, you edit it right inside your web browser, just like it's some other form you're submitting to Amazon or what have you. It just has a whole lot of text in it.
Right. Quite honestly, you could just do spelling checker if you wanted and just post those edits. You don't even have to actually contribute extra knowledge to it.
Right. So yeah, you see a wiki page and you say, hey, that is wrong. I'm going to change it. You hit edit this page and you're done. The fundamental idea was, and I'm looking up the guy's name now, I'll get that in a second. Some guy was in Hawaii and said, we need a way to quickly get information on the web and use the community and the massive amount of people that are reading it to make it correct. Wiki means quick, or wiki means quick in Hawaiian.
Awesome. So basically, a wiki is a living, breathing, web-based organism that is constantly growing and changing as more and more people participate in it. You go to a page, you see the information, you can add to it, you can change things, you can alter the content using built-in tools in the web page. There's usually an edit this page link or some such thing like that. You click it, it gives you a form, you fill it out, and it adds your entry to the wiki page, and it grows and it grows and it grows and it grows. And I think it maintains a sort of a change log, doesn't it?
Revision history.
Right. It doesn't necessarily add it to the page. I mean, you've now authored the page with whatever you left of the original content.
You've changed the page, but you can go and look at the revision history and you can see what's been done and what's been changed. And what this has led to is...
Yeah, who could use a wiki and what could they use it for?
Well, one of the great applications of wiki that exists now is the Wikipedia, which is available at wikipedia.org.
Spell that for me.
wikipedia.org, wikipedia.org. And what it is an online wiki-based encyclopedia that is being built literally from the ground up by its contributors and participants. And it is growing and growing and growing by leaps and bounds. It is actually, I think the nuclear reaction has started. It is just taking off, and it's just going to grow exponentially, and it's just going to keep going, going, going. And, you can find out just about anything at the Wikipedia now. I mean, how many entries are there? 500,000, or is that too low?
500,000 million.
I think the term is loud.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of entries now at Wikipedia, and
more than eight.
More than eight, less than 5 billion. So somewhere in there.
At the time of this radio show.
The thing about it is.
Actually, I think I recall reading that they have more entries than Encyclopedia Britannica does.
By number of entries, the Wikipedia, according to its creator, and I'm not really sure when this this interview was earlier this year, he says Jimmy Wales is his name, founded the Wikipedia. By number of entries, six times as large as Encyclopedia Britannica. But he says that's not really a fair comparison because they slice up entries differently. He says a more fair comparison is by number of words, and by sheer number of words, it's twice the size of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Okay, so this is cool for people going out looking for information, maybe doing research projects or something like that. And you might bring up the point that, well, how do I know if all these wackos out there on the internet are editing this stuff? Yeah. How do I know this is authoritative?
Exactly, and Mr. Wales says that median correction time of vandalism, which is how they refer to people who purposely edit these Wikipedia entries to be something totally bogus, average correction time is 5 minutes. So that's pretty impressive. And, you know, I mean, it's just the kind of thing where everybody's participating, everybody kind of owns the Wikipedia, and if you go to a page and you see something that's obviously wrong, you can fix it. You have the power. And, you know, the thing about it is that the Wikipedia is just one of these sort of killer app type, you know, applications or instances of Wiki. But Wiki is also a very powerful tool in business, is it not?
Absolutely.
I would say, yeah. I mean, the people who are, you know, most eager to throw some things together and communicate with each other and post some, you know, evolving information, it's used a lot in the tech world for documentation on projects.
I mean, could you use Wiki for knowledge management, per se?
I could you?
The trick about Wiki, it's an example of web publishing software. It differs from higher end web publishing software in that you typically don't have accounts where you log in as a particular person and have particular rights, and there aren't certain workflows that you can establish that you can impose on the editing process. With software that's typically larger scale that sometimes you have to pay for, you can impose workflows that, in a case of a Wiki, it's really easy to do anything. But it also means that you have the responsibility to keep it organized.
And don't most Wiki pages just basically just text? Is that another limitation?
I mean,
or can you put
images?
It's
a limitation. You can certainly put images, no problem. They're not generally not that graphically oriented. They usually have a very clean design, and there's not a lot of graphical information involved usually.
The easy thing about the Wiki is putting anything you want in there real quick. Their barrier to entry is super low. The hard thing is, over time, as everybody adds things to it, keeping it easy to follow and easy to browse.
It's like a patch of kudzu or something, and it just can grow out of control and become extremely unwieldy. I could see that happening and become somewhat difficult to find what you're looking for. Yeah,
that's the information problem in general with the web. I mean, the barrier to the web is actually not that high, especially when it first came out. I mean, HTML compared to previous publishing methods was way easier. I think what we're seeing is Google turning, you know, search into the way the web is organized. Mm-hmm. We'll see the same kind of thing marry up with Wiki, and that's magic.
I believe Google is actually starting to reference the Wikipedia in some of their search results, the answers.
The define
results.
Actually goes to some.
Well, I saw that, and I think define still goes to the define, the standard Google interface for, you know, word definitions. But I think that it may reference the Wikipedia as one of the results. And, okay, do you think we've kind of covered the Wiki? I suggest that everybody listening, if you haven't gone to the Wikipedia, go and check it out. Try going there, do a little search for something that interests you, and maybe
you're a cut and paste away from finishing your project.
Well, pretty much, and I think that you should go there and look up something that interests you, and if you see an opportunity to contribute, you know, I suggest you do so. That's what it's all about, and it's for everyone, and there are so many people out there who really care and really find the Wikipedia to be a valuable thing, and that they're passionate about it. That you know, even the jerks out there who are gonna try to screw it up with bogus entries, they get cleaned up pretty quickly. People actually really care. Why don't we jump on the phones here? And we have a caller on line one. We have a caller on line one. Norm, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Norm.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, here's the situation.
Go for it.
I have an IBM ThinkPad that I've used for the last year, and I've got all my stuff on it.
Okay.
And I'm giving it to my daughter. So I bought a new IBM ThinkPad. Now, I want to transfer the folders and applications to the new drive, which has Windows XP Pro.
Mm-hmm.
The old drive has Windows 98 SE.
Okay.
I've already cloned the original machine onto another drive, and the ThinkPad allows me to have two drives at once in there. But, man, I'm having a hard time getting these things activated. There's little secret files and other stuff it needs. Help me out.
Well, I can tell you that there is one particularly useful tool that comes with Windows XP. It's the Files and Settings Transfer Wizard. Have you tried that?
No, I have not.
All right. I believe it is in the Start menu under, okay, I'm going to say Start, Programs, Accessories, System Tools, Files, and Transfer Wizard. It's either in Accessories or it's in the System Tools folder inside of Accessories. You know what I'm talking about?
Great, yes.
If you haven't used XP very much, it'll be in that little part of the menu that's already visible right at the start. If you've used a few other programs since then, it'll probably have disappeared from that list.
Ty is absolutely correct. It is usually one of the first things in that menu when you first boot up the computer. Here's the deal. What it does is you can use it with any other version of Windows. You basically fire it up and you create a wizard disk. Okay, so
sure. You
basically makes like a bootable floppy, or I don't know if it's a bootable floppy or not. I don't think it is actually. But it puts the a wizard onto the floppy. You take it over to the old laptop, okay, and you run it, and it kind of. It allows you to choose, various file extensions, various settings, all your email, yada, 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 favorites, all that junk. And it prepares it all. And then it goes, and then are the two computers networked by any chance?
No, I don't have them networked.
Well, you can use a direct cable connection, and we can talk about that at a later time, how to do a direct cable connection, or if you can figure out how to get them networked. That's probably the best way to go about it. But basically, over this connection, the Windows XP box will pull all of the files that you want and all the settings that you want over the network to the new computer. It's absolutely phenomenal, and it works extremely well. And it'll probably get you 80 to 90% of the way. And then you can, it does everything, like screensavers, like you name it. Oh, I think we lost Norm. Well,
he's going to go try that right now.
I think he was so excited he hung up and ran to go do it. All right, here's the thing. Norm, if you want to call back, that's totally cool. That was an accident. It works extremely well. It gets you, like I said, 80 to 90% of the way there. I just used it. I'm not kidding. I just used it last week for a client of mine. It worked exceedingly well. I didn't have to do another thing. It did the whole thing. It moved their email settings, account settings, everything, folders, the
favorites,
works,
everything, yeah.
Favorites, screensavers, wallpapers, pictures, documents, everything.
What email program were they using?
They were using, awesome. They were using Outlook Express on the old laptop and using Outlook on the new laptop, and it did it seamlessly.
That's wonderful.
What it did was it brought Outlook Express from that one over to the new one, but then when we fired up Outlook, it said, "You want to grab your settings from Outlook Express?" And I said, "Yes," and boom, it was totally seamless. I was very impressed.
Big
so
bada boom.
The file and transfer settings wizard, file and settings transfer wizard, I think is what it's called. You use it on the XP box, and you can pull from I think any other Windows box. So it's pretty cool, and the wizard's pretty self-explanatory. Just follow the instructions. You can hear the music. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, I'm nobody in particular, and I'd like to ask you a question. Are you dissatisfied with your current IT service provider? And by that I mean, is your computer guy a jerk? Are you paying $100 an hour, $125 or more for IT service? In other words, is your computer guy ripping you off? Does your computer guy leave more problems than he fixes? Essentially, does he know what the heck he's doing? Call the Comm Group today and get the level of service you desire at the price you deserve, with in-home rates as low as $50 an hour and in-office rates as low as $75. That's K-O-M-M Group at 216-556-0141. That's 216-556-0141 or kommgroup.com. Don't be scared. Call the Comm Group.
I've got a pop quiz for you. How well can you do? What's the last magazine you bought at the checkout line? What's the last book your kid checked out of the library? Who did your basketball team pick in the draft? Who did your kid pick to sit next to in lunch? Name a book on the bestseller list. Name a book in your kid's backpack. Who is president of the United States? Who is president of your kid's student council? Can you name three R&B artists? Can you name three artists your kid studied in school?
Know what really matters. When you know all about your kid's school, you know all about your kid. Not only will your relationship benefit, so will your kid. When kids have parents involved in their school, they have higher grades, better attendance, and more self-esteem. Visit www.pta.org to find 100 simple ways to get involved. A message from the Ad Council and the National PTA.
People Power WERE 1300 AM has something for everyone. Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. we have America's Workforce. The Your Music Show is on Monday through Friday from 1 p.m. till 5 p.m. WERE is the Cleveland home for the University of Akron basketball games. WERE has shows on real estate, current events, investments, legal issues, car repair, health, various ethnic programs, a show on food, classical music, religion, and now 24 hours a week of Spanish programming, starting off with 2 hours Monday through Friday from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. Myra, in Espanol.
WERE 1300 ahora tiene programa latina. Los lunes hasta la viernes, las 5 de la mañana hasta las 7 de la mañana. Los jueves, las 9 de la mañana hasta las 12. Los viernes, 8 hasta las 11 de la tarde. El sábado, 7 hasta la 1 de la mañana. Y los domingos, los 4 hasta las 6.
Nice job, Myra.
Thank you, Tom. You did a nice job, too.
Mucho gracias, Myra.
Tú eres loco.
What did you say?
Medulloblastoma, hyperdiploidy, posterior mediastinum, Shimada classification. When an oncologist talks to you about childhood cancer, it could sound like a foreign language. CureSearch.org is a website that can help. It connects you to the doctors and scientists whose collaborative research has turned childhood cancer from a nearly incurable disease to one with an overall cure rate of 78%. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Jack Perkins, host of Biography on A&E, with some good news for my old hometown, Greater Cleveland. Now, every Monday through Friday at 6:55 a.m. and 5:30 p.m., I'll be your host for Biography for Radio here on WERE 1300 AM. Biography for Radio delivers life stories of the people you thought you knew. Hope you'll join us each weekday at 6:55 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. for Biography for Radio here on People Power, WERE, 1300 a.m., Cleveland.
When you went to Adams, you might have been called a spaz or a dork or a geek.
We know you're not on the phone with a girl, so call us instead at 216-578-1300. And now, back to Dial a Dork.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Dial a Dork. This is Irv. I'm here with Matt, Russ, and Ty. We got Kim in the booth. And we got Dewey the Answer Man.
Is he on the phone?
No, he's not on the phone, but he's listening. He's paying attention. He sent us an email saying that the Wikipedia is up to over 500,000 articles, and that's just in English. There are other languages.
That doesn't even include Esperanto.
Well, that takes it up to about 500,008 articles if you include Esperanto.
Including the article on Esperanto.
Including, yes, the entry on Esperanto is in Esperanto. Okay, there is another caller, and we already know that we are totally gonna bite the big one on this one, but we will give Paul his chance. Paul, are you there?
So if you guys want, can you, like, sober up Matt and send him to the forefront here?
Let me slap him across the face a couple of times and throw some cold water in his face.
There's no sobering him up.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, 2 weeks in a
he's hopeless.
I'm sleeping
Turkish
over
bath.
Here.
He's hopeless. We found him asleep in the studio.
Well, yeah, he's probably still left over from last week.
I just never leave. I'm always here.
Paul, what's going on? You got a problem, or are you just calling to give Matt a hard time?
Oh, both. I got plenty of problems, but would you like to know the specific one?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right. I've got a camcorder, and I'm trying to download the tape onto the computer, but the computer keeps coming up with a error message: no capture driver is available in the system. So then I went on to the website of the manufacturer of the camcorder and downloaded the driver, and I'm still getting the error message. So how do I get around this?
Now, are we 100% sure that you can connect the camcorder to the computer directly and offload the video that way?
Well, the picture in the manual that came with it, like hooking it up like it's supposed to be, even had a
and
you know, went out and bought that cord to go between the camcorder and the front of the computer.
Probably a very happy family of four around the computer while it's happening. I'm sure it's possible.
Nuclear family?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think somehow it knows it's there. I just don't know how to get this thing to read the camcorder. You know, and I turn the camcorder on and all that sort of stuff, too. So I'm not that far behind the eight ball.
Okay.
Well, we did. I did some Googling on this earlier, Paul. Thanks for that. The email, and only came up with a couple of things, and a lot of them center around uninstalling the video drivers and reinstalling the video drivers, and basically kind of the Microsoft method, which is to strip everything down and try it all over again, and
kick
hope
it.
To God,
kick it.
You know,
kick it.
Hit it a couple times and it'll work. Russ had, you know, similar results when he was searching for it today too. I'm thinking that we're either going to have to, try to get a later driver from NVIDIA and
remove. Well, wait, who makes the camera?
Panasonic.
And how old is the camera?
Oh, I got it like probably just before Christmas.
Oh, okay. So this is like basically one of the latest.
It's
latest models.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, have you tried the Panasonic website for any support forums or anything like that to see if perhaps there someone is experiencing the same thing that you are?
No, I just went on, searched, and it actually had like a thing where it actually said drivers, so I clicked on it,
sure.
And then all these other, I guess everything they make, and then downloaded the drive, what I thought was, I'm pretty sure it was a driver, you know, because it seemed to be in the right location, even had the right camera code number and all that sort of stuff on it.
Boy, this is a doozy. I hate when this happens, when a device just won't seem to work. Yeah. And this is going to be very, very frustrating. And one of the things, I am a proponent of the, you know, strip down and rebuild kind of method where you uninstall the device, you uninstall the drivers, and then you kind of try it all over again. One thing you could do is, and this kind of goes to a question that Dewey the Answer Man had posted to the mailing list earlier today, was some manufacturers ask you to install the software before ever plugging the device into the system, whereas others say go ahead and plug the device in and then let it find the drivers. In this case, you plugged it into the system, then you installed the drivers?
Well, what I did was I installed the program to edit all the video and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
Then I hooked up the camera, turned the camera on, turned the program on, and then, you know, clicked on a little camera thing, and then it came up with the no capture driver is available. So then I went on to the website, Panasonic's, downloaded it, installed it. I mean, everything seemed to work. You know, even, you know, it installed it and said, you want to shut down and restart? And I said, sure. It comes up, you know, pulled up the program again, and all the time the camcorder's on. So I'm thinking it's got to be sending a signal through that, through the cord that I bought.
Sure.
You know, so, and I'm almost sort of thinking that somehow I think it recognizes it's there because it's saying no capture driver is available instead of, like, device is not there.
I know that if certain capture programs won't start without their particular drivers available, which kind of, and that's how sometimes they marry them with their brand of devices. I know that like Hapag, I think is how you pronounce the manufacturer of like some web capture cards. It's like HAUPPAUGE or something like that. They, you know, their like WinTV program won't run without their drivers already installed. So you kind of can't use their program without their card, kind of a thing. But I'm not sure how, if that pertains to the situation. Russ, did you find something? You
were, I'm digging around here. What OS are we talking about again?
Yeah, what operating system are you running?
XP Home.
XP Home.
That's fine.
And the program I'm using, when I went out and bought this thing, I didn't like do it on purpose. But when I came back, I found out when I'm reading through the manuals that came with the video card that I actually got the same program that they had sent like a demo model with.
Okay.
You know, with the video card, it was like a 30-day free trial.
It came with the camera?
No, this came with the video card.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, so the camera, in the owner's manual, it had a disc or a program or whatever that would come with it, but that's if you bought the more expensive camera, of course.
Okay.
You know, so...
Well, one of the things I dug up here, at least as a side tip to give a shot to, you want to get your latest DirectX up on your machine. That controls, I think, a lot of the graphic and video stuff.
Wait, you start again?
DirectX.
DirectX. If you look in Windows Update, which XP Home has.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Just go to in Internet Explorer, pull down the Tools menu, and you should have a selection for Windows Update, and it will take you right to that site.
I'm always being bugged by DirectX, and I actually avoided it for a while because I didn't feel like I was doing too much video stuff.
DirectX is sort of the multimedia control software that's part of the Windows
system. One of those
system.
XP things or Windows things gets in there and does everything, and I was scared of it for a long time, but things run good with it. So give that a shot, especially if you're doing more advanced video and graphics.
XP doesn't ship with the latest... DirectX or what?
I mean, when did he get XP? Who knows? You know.
Well,
it's SP2. I'm pretty sure that DirectX 9B was out at that point.
Yeah, but I don't know if the service pack does DirectX. I think DirectX is its own installer.
It makes you reboot as well.
It's not going to be in critical updates. It's going to be in like recommended updates. There might be a DirectX updater. You could try that. You could also try searching around Google for maybe someone's written an open source version of the WDM drivers, the capture drivers for that particular camera or that family of cameras. That camera may share a certain kind of chipset with a lot of other cameras. And maybe somebody's written a sort of an open source set of drivers. I know that's true for like the Brooktree 800 series capture cards and things of that nature. Another thing you might want to consider is you may need a device that will sit between the camera and your computer. I know that the manual shows that the camera plugs directly into the computer, but you may need some kind of capture device to sit between the camera and the computer just to make it work. Because this seems like a pretty tricky little thing. But I really think the thing you should do is uninstall everything that you've done in terms of the camera. Not necessarily the video card, but everything you've done in terms of the camera. Uninstall the device. Uninstall all those drivers. Go into add remove programs. Look for stuff in there. Look for WDM drivers. Uninstall all of that and then start from scratch. And maybe it was just the sequence of things that failed you, as opposed to software itself.
A lot of these reports are XP Home too. So
okay, so maybe XP Home, in Microsoft's efforts to simplify and strip down the Windows XP system for home users, broke something in this sort of video capture. Although I can't believe that they would do that, because that's got to be one of the major applications.
Intentionally, I wouldn't think, but it might be one of those ones. It's a tougher speed bump.
Maybe the upgrade
to Pro might be worth it.
So, that's really all we can say at the moment, is to kind of try the sort of strip down and reinstall process and see if that makes a difference. I would search Google. I would search some of the terms in your error messages. I would search by camera model. I would try to explain what you're doing. And you might even consider posting a question on the Usenet news somewhere and see if anybody can help you.
Okay, I mean, that seems all right. I mean, I think the first thing I'll do, like you guys said, is just go on to Windows Update and just see if something is there.
Absolutely.
Look for the DirectX. I mean, maybe that will help.
Sometimes video drivers or motherboard chipsets.
That's true. And there may be some kind of conflict. There may be some kind of conflict that we just aren't aware of, that the camera and the video card just don't want to play well together or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I just think it's actually probably pretty easy. I'm just missing some obvious.
Yeah, it's always something simple.
It might be really hard.
Computers. It's just how hidden is it?
Yeah. Feel free to email us any screenshots of error messages and things that you might get, and we will do our best to point you in the right direction.
Okay.
All right?
All right, that sounds real good.
All right, so give it a shot for now. You can call us next week if you want and let us know how you're doing, if you found anything, if you made any progress, or if you're still stuck spinning your wheels.
All right, I'll do that.
All right, cool.
Hey, got one more question.
Go ahead.
You guys were advertising for that Nauticon thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what happens if I'm a con? Can I still go?
Absolutely.
It's actually the authorities that have something to say about that.
All right, I'll check with them. You're welcome.
No, I don't think there are any background checks during registration process, so I think you're good to go.
It might be that ankle bracelet I got. You know, me and Martha both got the mauve, you know, color one.
Well, maybe it would be a good thing for you to go to, because maybe someone could hack it for you.
Yeah, that would be a bad. Using a blowtorch, but gets kind of warm after a while.
Extend the range maybe a few hundred yards, you know.
All right.
All right, dude.
All right, take care.
Okay, we're going to, I think we still have a few minutes before the next break, so why don't we jump on line number two? Oh, I'm sorry, line number one is Evan. Evan, are you there?
Hey, I'm here, guys.
Hi, Evan, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Great show tonight, fellas.
How's the wireless treating you in your apartment?
You know, the wireless is not actually any better, but we're getting ready to move in the next couple of months, and I've decided that I'm just going to try again in a new locale and see what happens there, maybe change a channel, switch to B, you know, that kind of stuff.
That was going to be my next suggestion, that if the reception of your wireless didn't improve, that I would move.
Just go ahead and move cities.
Just go ahead and just get a new place to live.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, your wireless internet
unless you're
the most
controlled.
Well, they're not. Evan, what can we do for you this week?
Well, here's my question.
Okay.
I'm getting a used laptop from a buddy of mine, and what he tells me is that the battery on that laptop only lasts maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And my plan is to get a new battery, maybe off eBay or something, but I want to know, what's the best way to preserve the life of that new battery?
Never use it.
That's not even true. I have a big problem with this because it's actually cycling. People who cycle their batteries more, I think, get a little more use out of them.
I think that's not the case at all. I think the more times you uncharge it and charge it up again, you've shortened it. I'm crazy?
I think there's all kinds of research out there about exercising batteries, and I think the computer should start doing that for us.
What I do, I don't know if this is correct. I know I read enough hints about it somewhere to suggest that I should do it, and it's long in the midst of my memory. What I do is, when I'm at home, when I can plug in, I plug in the whole time. When I start to use the battery, I let it drain all the way down,
sure.
And then I charge it fully. Apparently, if you let it run partway and then charge it partway, and you get in the habit of doing that, the battery can learn a new capacity, which is a fraction of what its capacity was
right,
before.
The memory
I,
need
I
there.
Thought laptop batteries were quote-unquote memory-free,
no.
Unlike
they
old
also,
cell phone batteries.
Memory also is at the same exact point, so it usually is not in sort of human variance of, you know, I used it for 20 minutes or 10 minutes, it's not going to happen, but if you use, you know, you happen to have it on your lap in your car to work every day, and it's exactly 28 minutes every single day, then you run into problems with that kind of thing, is the way I heard it.
You know, and thinking back deep into the memory banks here, the Apple PowerBooks, I think, used to have a utility called Deep Discharge.
Exactly.
And that
Apple
allows the computer
better.
To discharge the battery for you and then start recharging it up again, and that way you exercise your battery right.
And I also think that some laptops, Evan, you can hang on the line, by the way, when we cut to break, and we can come back if you want. But I know that some laptops in kind of the BIOS kind of thing have a kind of a battery conditioning utility that doesn't really extend the life of the battery so much as make the capacity accurate again. Because what happens is the battery thinks it has, you know, X number of milliamperes per hour or whatever that is. And it thinks it has this many, when in reality, it really doesn't have that many anymore. So you get a really inaccurate reading on the power meter of your Windows system and all that kind of thing. So hang on 1 second. We'll cut to a break. We'll come back and talk about this a little bit more in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hi, I'm nobody in particular, and I'd like to ask you a question. Are you dissatisfied with your current IT service provider? And by that I mean, is your computer guy a jerk? Are you paying $100 an hour, $125 or more for IT service? In other words, is your computer guy ripping you off? Does your computer guy leave more problems than he fixes? Essentially, does he know what the heck he's doing? Call the Comm Group today and get the level of service you desire at the price you deserve. With in-home rates as low as $50 an hour and in-office rates as low as $75. That's KOMM Group at 216-556-0141. That's 216-556-0141 or kommgroup.com. Don't be scared. Call the Comm Group.
Hi, I'm JB. What would you say if I told you there's a simple test that can help determine if you have diabetes? What if I told you all you had to do is knock your socks off? That's right. All you have to do is to take off your shoes and socks and have your doctor examine your feet at every visit. Believe it or not, the feet can often show you signs of serious medical conditions such as diabetes. 18 million people in the U.S. have diabetes, and over 5 million of them don't even know they have it. It's impacted my family as well. That's why I'm joining the American Podiatric Medical Association, urging everyone to have their feet examined at every doctor's visit. People with diabetes and their families need to pay special attention to their feet and watch them carefully for complications. So knock your socks off and have your feet checked every time you visit your doctor. And if you notice anything like redness, numbness, swelling, or inflammation, or if your feet feel cold to the touch, see a podiatrist right away. Early detection is the key to prevention. For more information, visit APMA.org.
Every Wednesday at 10 a.m., join Barb Storch on People Power WERE 1300 AM. Barb interviews our area's most influential people from all walks of life. If you want to know what's going on in the greater Cleveland area, then you need to listen to Barb Storch each Wednesday at 10 a.m. here on People Power WERE 1300 AM. WERE, we're the talk of Cleveland.
I'm Garcelle Beauvais Nylon. 2.5 million Americans have epilepsy, and 1 in 10 Americans will have a seizure in their lifetime. Yet many of us don't know the facts about the condition. To learn more, visit epilepsyfoundation.org or call 1-800-332-1000.
Next week on Report to Consumers, we kick off our look at Consumer Reports annual auto issue. First up, the top picks for 2005. From the best family sedan and small car to the most fun to drive and the best SUVs and minivan. Plus, a report on a little-known safety feature that could save your life. All about cars, starting next week on Report to Consumers.
Report to Consumers airs weekdays at 5:55 a.m. right here on WERE.
Why do you think you're a dork? I don't think you're a dork.
We know you're not on the phone with a girl, so call us instead at 216-578-1300. And now, back to Dial-A-Dork.
Welcome back. Evan, are you still with us? Evan!
Oh, we lost him.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, no, he's still there. Okay. Okay, see, we did a little research over the break. Russ, you are able to confirm that, yes or no, these batteries have memory?
I found a couple things here. One of them is that lithium-ion batteries, which my laptop is using right now, and yours may be, do not have the memory effect, which is a known battery effect. The other option would be, I guess, nickel metal hydrides.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. So pop your battery out. It'll say either
Li-on or
I don't remember what it says.
It's just Li minus anyway. Lithium ion.
Yeah, that.
Well, if there's an Li, it's lithium. If there's an Ni, it's nickel.
Exactly. So there's that. And I found this little tip here in terms of battery life. Stay out of extreme temperatures. Hots, colds.
That goes for you too.
Your battery in the freezer. Don't go to Arizona, I guess. I don't know. But don't leave your battery in the car. We've talked about that before. For heat or
you
cold.
Should say that because that's exactly where I'm going to get this laptop, is Arizona.
Are you serious?
don't leave it
no
in the car.
No wonder the
there.
Battery doesn't work anymore.
Don't trust laptop from Arizona.
But one thing is, I've had good luck, Evan, with reconditioned, refurbished, reconditioned batteries on eBay. There are people out there who, I don't know if they cracked the case open and put in the new kind of cells or whatever, but they, you know, they do a pretty okay job.
My God, you just made, I just remembered something. When I was consulting down in Atlanta, they have a chain of stores down there called like Batteries Plus. And I've never seen anything like that up north of the Mason-Dixon line, but you could actually take any type of battery there and they would suck out the innards and redo it, and that's voila, right. you're good to go. Absolutely. We used them for reconditioning the batteries inside of a big universal power supply thing.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah, it was incredible.
If you drink enough that your blood is purely alcohol, can they fix that too?
Yeah.
Suck it all out, put in regular blood again.
No, they've got a cot, you know, in the room.
I think Keith Richards is their spokesman. Now, go ahead, Russ. You got something else?
And the very last thing it says, and very much in not so much the memory effect, but what Amitai was saying, also avoid partial charges and use the battery until it's dead. Battery experts liken partial charges and discharges to eating a cup of lard every day.
No.
It's fun, but it's not good. No, it doesn't say that.
No, he didn't.
It significantly shortens your battery's life.
All right, so there you go, Evan. If you're going to use the battery, use it all the way up and then charge it fully after that, and I guess that's good for the battery. And one thing just to remember that, look, the batteries, more than any other component, I would say, of the computer are perishable.
I would say hard drives are more perishable.
Well, I just mean like they actually can go stale. They actually can spoil. Where I've seen,
got a bunch of grapes on mine. They've been going bad.
Yes. Yeah. Keep the food off of your laptop away from your battery. But do you see what we're saying there?
Yeah. So no extreme temperatures, fully discharged, fully charged, and no perishable food.
Something like that.
Other things you can do, you can get solar power for your power for laptops. I've seen that done in Arizona. You could probably get away with it. I don't know how feasible that is in a place like Cleveland, for instance, but there are people doing that.
but I think he wants to use his battery, you know.
There's that, or you could get a team of reliable hamsters and a wheel.
Yeah, well, I was thinking I'd go the windmill route, actually.
I'm pretty sure if you used enough potatoes, you could power it. I've seen little clocks that can be powered by potato.
But, yeah.
All right. So
bicycle, just pedal really fast.
There you go. I mean, see, right. I think basically the thing is if you're gonna use the battery, use it up and then fully charge it again. And I think that's what the experts are saying are best for your battery. But keep in mind that regardless of what you do, batteries will slowly but surely lose their capacity and eventually not even take a charge at all or not give any power that the laptop will accept, and you'll have to replace it, just like the one that's in there currently.
All right, thanks, fellas.
Okay, yep, you bet. Thank you, Evan. All right, well, we are out of callers. We're going to have to talk about something. Dagnabbit.
I've feared this moment all day long.
Pressure's on.
That's I cannot speak really, extemporaneously. I don't
a
know
really
do.
Cool gadget today. It was on one of the major news blogs. Samsung has a personal cell phone, essentially. They have a radio broadcaster you sit at home on your landline. Works for 30 miles.
What?
30 miles.
So it's basically a cordless phone that lasts 30 miles?
Exactly. And
are
it
you
may
serious?
Violate FCC regulations.
But who cares?
But it's only $300. You could go to jail for $300. That's good.
Well, no, wait a minute. Wait, I mean,
just like
are they selling
hard
it in the United States or what?
I did not see.
I mean, if they,
the
would they even be allowed
sales.
To sell it in the United States if
I would
it's going to violate?
Not, but
FCC?
Hey, the interweb, you can buy across boundaries.
Oh, well, that's
not
true.
Not that we would ever have a
Now, how cool would that be? I mean,
I think it's exactly not what I need, but that's me. Because I like my cell phone to go
well,
with
true.
Me out of town.
That's true.
I get online with my cell phone.
But if you don't have the wherewithal to pay the monthly fees of both your. Landline and your cell phone.
That's right, a little upfront cost there. And
yeah,
golden.
I mean, you know, you got to spend money to save money in this particular case.
You know, I got to ask how loud the beeper on that handset is when you hit the find the phone button on the base unit.
30 miles loud.
That's right. It actually sets off a
Tune
small
to 98.7
charge.
FM to locate your phone.
That's hilarious.
Air raid siren.
Maybe it comes with one of those little sort of a GPS tracker things that they use to find RoboCop. Yeah, if you recall.
That could work.
Yeah. All right. Let's see now.
Wait a minute. I got something for
you
guys.
Go ahead, go.
All right, this was another one that was quick. I forget which website I saw this off of, but you know the iPod shuffles are like uber tiny little iPod type things.
I saw one. They're real cute.
This guy hacked together this old like 70s style huge ear can headphones, stuffed the iPod shuffle inside, wired it up all together, and he's got headphones that have the shuffle inside. No wires, no nothing. It's like, plays a gigabyte worth of songs without anything.
All right, well, like just in the last 2 seconds, we got two different callers calling in, so let's go to
4 minutes to go.
And then 4 minutes left, so we got to do this real fast.
Well, wait a minute.
We got to do it now.
Okay, fine.
There's no minutes to wait.
Line one, George.
Yeah, okay. I talked to you guys about a week ago or so about I got a pop-up that wants to go on the internet on me, okay?
Oh, right.
All
right,
there's three different things that says when you go up into connections. And I've used my default, and then I've used the top one. I forget what it says right now. I've used that, and it'll stay off for a while. Then it kicks right back in. Another thing I run into is I got a program that comes on when I put the computer on. When she charges up, bingo, here comes this program. And I have to hit it, you know, the X to get it off
right.
of there.
That's what I think we were talking about last week, is there's some program that's running that keeps trying to get to the internet. What operating system are you using?
XP.
Okay, try going into your start menu, select run, and type msconfig, msconfig, and in that program there's a startup tab, and what you want to do is you kind of want to scroll through those entries and take a look at everything that's starting up when you turn on your computer, and you may find a couple of applications that you don't recognize, you don't know what they are, and you can disable them that way by unchecking them. And then maybe when you boot up the next time, you won't get those applications, and maybe you'll even kill the thing that keeps trying to get an internet connection.
Okay. And if it don't work,
let me ask one other thing.
When you go into run, do you lose the programs?
You don't lose the programs. You can go back into MSConfig and recheck them.
I know what you're talking about.
Okay, Ty, what do you got?
If you have SpyBot, which we seem to mention every week,
it's
got a tab in there as well that lets you control at a more fine-grained level all the things that start at startup, no matter how they make themselves start. It's just a list of checkboxes. And so anything that might not show in MSConfig, you could catch in SpyBot in that tab.
Yeah, I got Spy. I got SP2 on here, okay, and SpyBox on here when I go into the main Windows, you know, when you hit the Windows where everything comes up, your whole computer, everything that's on it, and SpyBot's in there. Would you recommend uninstalling that?
No, leave SpyBot on there. It's good. But you can use SpyBot to also control the thing. George, we got to run. We got one more caller, so give that a try and call us next time if you like. Chris, can you hear us?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Chris. We got like 1 minute or something, so go for it.
Oh, well, my question's sort of related anyway, which is like I get this sort of ghost of an E, which is the same as the E of the Internet Explorer, sort of floating above my bottom button for Internet. So I'm just wondering, what is that? And I'm wondering if it's spyware.
You got a ghost of an E? Where is it?
It's floating above my buttons on the bottom of my Windows if I'm just on my desktop.
I think I've seen that before, but I cannot think of what it is right now. Can you email us a screenshot? Basically, when you see it on the screen, okay, when it's happening, hit the button that says print screen. It's up. Mm-hmm. It's up by like where scroll lock and stuff like that are, the upper right hand corner of your keyboard.
Yes.
And go into like Microsoft Word or WordPad and just hit paste. Because when you hit print screen, it takes a screenshot and puts it in the clipboard.
Uh-huh.
Then paste it into either WordPad or Microsoft Word or something like that, okay? And email it to dorks@dialadork.com, and we'll take a look at it. And if we have an answer for you, we'll get back to you, and maybe we can even tell you on the next show.
Okay,
so do that
great.
For us,
yeah,
okay?
It just appears immediately, periodically, and then sometimes when I run hijack this and clean out everything, then it seems to disappear, but then it comes back inevitably.
Wow, that is, I think it could be haunted, not sure.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, anyway, yeah, definitely.
Thank you, sir.
All right, definitely send us a picture of it if you can capture it
and do a little
ghost hunting, and we'll see if we can, as I really feel like I've seen that before, so maybe it's something simple and I can help you out with it.
Right, thank you.
All right, you bet, Chris. All right, well, The dulcet tones of Dolomite, the Human Tornado, are
yet another fantastic episode of Dial of Darks.
Yes, we solved exactly zero problems. We're incredibly proud of ourselves.
But we moved them along. Progress was made.
Progress was step by step, inch by inch, row by row.
Enablers.
Anyway, check out the Wikipedia. Check out Nauticon. Check out VisionNet. Be good to your fellow human. I don't know what I'm talking about. I gotta go. I need a beer. We'll be across the street getting beers. Enjoy Dial of Dork. We'll see you next week.
You get all those pimps together, it was live.